Today we hear from Cameron Walsh, who oversees waste management in Guelph. We learn about waste, composting, recycling, disposal of roof shingles and tires, the success of the Guelph Waste Diversion Program, and the Ontario-wide changes to recycling management. Under this new model, the companies that produce blue bin materials must fully fund and operate the recycling system. What a relief to learn that there will be no changes to the residential garbage collection once Guelph implements Ontario's Producer Responsibility Program. The Downtown Waste Disposal Project is also an important topic. Be sure to have your say before August 18th. Now over to our moderators, Tanya and Phil.
Welcome to our last breezy breakfast of the summer. Today, we're talking solid waste in Guelph. Before we start, I'd like to read the City of Guelph's land acknowledgement. As we gather, we are reminded that Guelph is situated on treaty land that is steeped in rich Indigenous history and home to many First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people today. As a city, we have a responsibility for the stewardship of the land on which we live, work, and play. Today, we acknowledge the Mississaugas of the First Nation of the Anishinaabeg peoples on whose traditional territory we are meeting. To introduce this topic, I'd like to let you all know that from July 2023 to the end of December 2025, all municipalities in Ontario will transition their Blue Box program to a new collection model. And under this new model, the companies that produce Blue Box materials will be required to fully fund and operate the recycling system. Currently, recycling costs are split between municipal taxpayers and producers of Blue Box materials. Producer responsibility organizations will run a single province-wide common collection system via a nonprofit called Circular Materials. Now, producers of industrial, commercial, and institutional waste will have to make alternative arrangements to have their recycling collected. In other solid waste news, Guelph has started the Downtown Waste Project, and it has the following goals: to prioritize public space containers for use by pedestrians visiting the downtown, and to implement a dedicated collection strategy for downtown residential, industrial, commercial, and institutional properties. Our guest today is Cameron Walsh. He's the Division Manager of Solid Waste Resources in the Environmental Services Department of the City of Guelph. Cameron, I'd like to turn it over to you.
Thank you very much, Tanya. I appreciate the opportunity to be here, and thanks, everyone. Nice to see everyone. And a great forum, Councillor Ault. An excellent overview of the two of the current changes and challenges ongoing at the Solid Waste Resources Division. And so maybe a little bit more on that, I guess, first in the Blue Box. The regulations changed in around 2016, 2017 to the Waste-Free Ontario Act. So the Blue Box is the last of the programs to transition to what's called the circular economy. And that is related to, again, the producers are now responsible and accountable for the packaging of products they produce. And by having a sight line from essentially cradle to cradle, so right through to the waste and then recovery, it increases the opportunity for innovation in design, to design out waste, create employment opportunities, and so on and so forth. So that's the move that the province is making through legislation to move towards a circular economy around the Blue Box materials. City of Guelph will still be responsible for collecting waste and organics. So part of what we'll be working on over the next few years, our transition date is January 1, 2025. So what we have been working on, we'll continue to work on, is the transition plan. It's multi-pronged. So it involves staff transition planning, assets, customer service, all that good stuff that we provide currently. And our goal is to transition the service in a professional manner to maintain the high standards that the City of Guelph residents currently enjoy from the city, and to support the new proponents in their work moving forward. So that's that in a nutshell. And then leading to the downtown project, which is unique over time, things like diversion have become important. So the downtown that we're in currently wasn't designed for the types of waste management needs that there are today. So we have what are called the mushrooms or the public space containers out in the street now. Those service residential units above the businesses. Those in some aspects serve the public transient people who are using these facilities, as well as some of the businesses and so on and so forth. There's enough sort of public space containers out on the street, but we hear complaints about they migrate. So people move them around in front of other businesses. We hear that they attract bees, things like that. So we spend a lot of time cleaning them and replacing them and things like that. And the idea is to sort of take a fresh look at the downtown and look at it from what would it take to design it properly with the blue box transition also factored in. So the blue mushrooms in the downtown would be collected by others in the future. So how does that fit in? And that's currently live on Have Your Say Guelph. We're looking for feedback. The initial cutoff date is August 18th. So, and if you go to Have Your Say Guelph Downtown Waste, you will see a series of public forums that have been held, as well as the minutes and the presentations that were at those forums. And please feel free to complete the survey and provide your input into what Guelph may look like moving forward in terms of how waste would be managed in the downtown. So those are sort of two high-level overviews. I guess, Councillor, I'll open up for some questions, if that's okay.
Thanks very much, Cameron. I have Tanya. Do you want me to field the questions, or do you want to?
I'm sorry, Phil, what did you say again?
Goodness, okay, I'm pretty well eating this mic. Tanya, would you like to field the questions, or would you like me to?
At the restaurant, please do field them. And I've got a couple here that I can start with.
Perfect. Let's go to you then.
Okay. So Cameron, what exactly does it mean to prioritize public space containers in downtown Guelph? I know you touched upon the containers currently, people sort of randomly stuff their garbage in the containers, and that's one of the issues. So will you please just expand a bit on the prioritization and what that means?
Thank you. Yes, I appreciate you calling out that word. Essentially, we want to have the public space containers used for litter and litter alone. So we need a system that works behind that, that actually addresses the needs of the residents in the downtown, in the businesses in the downtown, as well as the folks who will be collecting the blue box in the downtown. So ideally, the public space containers would be used for litter management and folks walking up and down the sidewalks. And we have that supported by a system that's designed properly for the new requirements in the downtown. If that helps.
Absolutely, it helps. I see that Morgan has a question.
I've got a number of friends that are small business owners and not in the downtown. They are in commercial plazas around the periphery, and just wondering when the initial notice went out to them that their waste collection was no longer going to be through the city. A number of them were apparently caught unawares. I knew it was coming because I follow council. When did the notice go out to commercial businesses? I'm wondering when the city notified commercial businesses that they would no longer be having collection by the city, that they would have to find their own way of having their waste collected.
Thank you very much. If I understand your question correctly, you're speaking to the businesses that are no longer receiving city collection and the notification of those businesses. So yes. Through the master planning process, it was decided that we were encroaching on private sector business and that we were servicing about 5% of the ICI. And so the other 95% were serviced by the private sector. part of the moving forward to support decision making relative to service levels and to avoid sort of cost overruns and scope creep was to essentially redefine, and there was no sort of defined service level around this. So we defined through the master plan as approved through council the service level. The notification, and I'm going from memory here, we were to transition in March. I believe the notification started in the new year, so in January-ish. We learned that the data we used, despite best efforts to be comprehensive, there were things like additional businesses, additional, so we did another round of notifications. And I believe July 1st was the final, if I remember correctly, the final day for recall of the carts that were associated with that. So in terms of notifications starting in January, we learned through the process that our data was not as comprehensive as we thought it was, and therefore it required a second round of notifications and in a pause relative to that. So it's unfortunate for the folks who were receiving that, but it also has an equity lens as well relative to the other folks in businesses who are not receiving that kind of thing. So that was the rationale for it. It's about service levels, it's about equity, and about moving forward in decision making relative to our role, which is our mandate is municipal residential in the downtown is a special case. So proper, the downtown proper. So it's delineated and defined as well. And that's the decision making behind it. Although it doesn't feel good, or it's sort of cold comfort to maybe hear that for the folks who are impacted, that's the rationale behind it.
Thank you. Just a quick follow-up to that, the sort of biggest complaint that I heard from those business owners that I'm talking about is, well, we pay taxes too. Do commercial businesses actually pay taxes to the city in order to cover waste collection?
So this is where the service level piece is critical. The taxes essentially support all of the services at the service level that they're provided. And that's what makes it all work together. So everyone's sort of tax allotment goes in, it's relative to the service level. So that was the key piece. So to the extent that commercial taxes are collected, they are put into the tax collection sort of pot to then pay for the service levels. So that was the emphasis on service level. And I hope that helps clarify why we would focus on service levels. And if we allow service levels to essentially, if we don't define them, the tax burden increases and there's no sort of decision points along the way. So now that is defined and delineated, it can be a decision point, it can be a discussion point, but it would be a fulsome discussion about our role relative to the private sector role, relative to the changes in legislation, versus allowing the city to sort of encroach into another sector without first a council touch point. So that's the real rationale there. Again, city taxes go into the pot to pay for all the services at the existing first or the approved service levels of those services. I hope that helps.
Thank you very much, Cameron.
So yeah, I'm going to ask a question. Is the private sector best to deal with waste like packaging? Do you have any concerns?
Do I have any concerns? I think there's going to be bumps as we move to transition an entire province. It is done in stages, and it is done in stages to mitigate the risks. I do think they are best suited from a circular economy perspective. Having full visibility and accountability to all of those costs, just by nature of that, will create innovation around the packaging design and recovery that is currently not there. Right now, it stops at sort of the consumer shelf, right? So it's all about marketing to get it off the shelf and in your home. And they're excellent at that, very effective at getting us to buy stuff and bring it home. But now being responsible past that is a whole new paradigm for the producers. And I believe they can rise to the challenge. I've seen them adapt quickly already in terms of their packaging and what they're working on currently. So I have faith in the circular economy and where we're going. And it's really the next level. We've reached our plateau in terms of what the current system can do. So taking it to the next level, I think, is really where we need to go as a society and be more visible, have more visibility to the waste streams and accountability around them.
Okay, so actually that leads me to my next question, which is, would you mind sort of further unpacking the concept of a circular economy?
Circular economy is exactly as it sounds. So right now the system would be what would be called a take, make, dispose. So it's extractive. We mine, we take all of these resources out, we use them for a bit, and they end up in the landfill. So that's causing issues relative to raw materials. That's causing issues relative to greenhouse gas emissions. All of that transportation, all of that handling, as it gets to us, the carbon footprint increases as we handle it more. So the circular economy is about backing that up in the whole supply chain. We have a living example in Guelph, which is our Food Future work that's based on the organics framework from the province. So we put in an application as a city, very successful. And that whole pilot was about doing that on the organics side of the house. So from farm to fork, finding those intervention points along the way, new business opportunities, et cetera. So a circular economy is really about looking at the whole value chain, looking where waste is happening, the cost of the waste at certain intersection points, and then looking for opportunities to turn that into a business and turn that into something that improves social and environmental outcomes. So that's kind of the philosophy behind the circular economy.
Great. Thanks very much, Cameron. Way back when there was a solid waste advisory committee, we heard that one of the concerns for people was they had to go way over to the facility to dispose of electronic waste, brush, tires, all of those sorts of things. And one of the proposals was that there should be little mini depots in other parts of the city where people could drop off things more conveniently, and maybe then the city could get a truck and take it over to the main park. Has that become part of the plan?
Thank you very much, Duncan. Part of the Solid Waste Management Master Plan is to look at those options moving forward. So that would be what we would consider creating enhanced accessibility to recycling programs. And so we do have a comprehensive centralized facility, which creates a lot of efficiencies for the city, but they're creating some satellite opportunities for folks in conjunction potentially with the producers of these products where possible, where there's synergies, is one of the things we'll be looking at over the term of this master plan, which is a 5-year term that was approved in 2021. So that's one of the things we're looking at. Absolutely. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. And now I'll just pass it over to Ted, who has finally come back from COVID. Welcome back, Dan.
Yeah, thanks, Phil, and thanks, Cameron, for being here. My question is really just to learn more about the program in terms of whether other jurisdictions have adopted a similar model, either nationally, you know, in international terms, or municipally, or any in between levels of government, and including programs that have been attempted that maybe didn't work that well and we can learn from. So are you aware of other jurisdictions that have tackled this problem successfully and maybe unsuccessfully?
Thanks once again. So the master plan did do a scan of other municipal offerings, and we did do a service review in 2018. So we do know our services are among the most efficient and certainly among the most advanced in the industry. So one of the benefits of the blue box transition is standardizing that across the province and adding more materials to the blue box currently. So that's a step change across the province. So provincially, on the blue box side of the house, it's standardized and moving to a circular economy. On the organic side of the house, there's an organics framework in place. There's still some deadlines and things like that to work out, but Guelph is already at the bar for organics diversion as well, and moving past that in terms of looking to address avoidable food waste and things like that. So the program Guelph has put in place, the Citizens of Guelph through Council, is considered one of the best from an industry standard perspective. And there are others in that space as well. So other folks are using different technologies, and we're learning from them as well. So we're among the leaders, and are certainly the circular economy work around the organics is receiving international attention there. So But in terms of what hasn't worked, we were early adopters of some new technology. Didn't work out so well, but being, I guess, brave and has some benefits as well. So we learn from others as well. But anaerobic digestion relative to source separated organics is coming back around as a potential opportunity. Guelph was one of the early adopters and had a bit of a rough go with that. But it's coming back around, the technology's improved. So we're continuing to look at these things and work through them as part of the master plan and through council.
I just want to follow up on a few things. First one I want to follow up on is that anaerobic digester and the whole challenge of equipment lifespan. I know that we've already replaced one organics facility, and I think it might have been related to that. I know that there were challenges with acids being gassed off. What are we looking at in terms of costs for doing the right thing?
Well, costs for doing the right thing are, especially around this kind of infrastructure, solid waste or water, wastewater, there's substantial costs. Relative to the new organics plant, it's state-of-the-art, Councillor Ault. So it has the provisions in there to address the types of issues that were causing, that caused the problems with ammonia and so on and so forth. So it's a state-of-the-art facility. It's an aerobic facility, and it's working well. So part of our asset management is plan. It's operated as a design, build, operate, maintain. We have a third-party operator. We do condition assessments every 5 years in our capital program, which Councillor Ault and colleagues will be looking at in the fall. That includes the state of good repair. So that's how we manage the assets. The assets have, in this case, a 30-year life cycle, and then you'll see the replacement and so on and so forth. One of the things, Councillor Ault, that I think you're well aware of is the infrastructure gap has left us a little bit behind the eight ball, but the planning is much better now than it was in the past. So that's how we address these assets, through comprehensive asset management, maintenance, ongoing maintenance, and then a funding strategy to actually replace them.
Thanks for that. Yes, indeed. Please stay tuned for more about our infrastructure gap. I'm just going to pass this down the line to Warren. Question is perhaps going a little bit into the future. We know that Guelph has got the responsibility to get to 200,000 people. The facilities that you got now in the master plan that addresses these things, do you see a major change going forward? And do you see the fact that we have a water system that is capable of expanding and handling all this growth that's going to hit us very shortly?
Thank you very much again. For the specifics around the water system, that would be best directed to my colleague Wayne Gallagher, but I can advise in the general terms of growth and how it impacts infrastructure, including ours at Solid Waste. Essentially, the provincial commitments and things like that to housing and growth really have accelerated the trajectory of growth. So that has associated costs that need to be factored in, and I know myself and my colleagues are working diligently to try and grapple with that impact. But as traditionally, our master plans would factor in the growth rate for the municipality, and then the timing of when infrastructure is required, and then we would work with our finance folks to develop the best funding strategy, present that to the executive team, who then present the council. And there's a lot of work to try and get essentially a community's worth of needs into a finite amount of funding. So there's a lot of back and forth about timing, priorities, that sort of thing, to develop a comprehensive recommendation through executive team to council. So that's the kind of thing we work on to try and manage that. And then at council, when those types of considerations are discussed, after we've done a lot of the background work and staff. So hopefully that helps.
Thank you. I want to get to a couple of more day-to-day questions. First one, I guess, is related to the second one. What kind of day-to-day or week-to-week changes can people expect to see in terms of garbage collection, if any? And when you talk about more materials being added to recycling, are we moving away from the three bin system? Are we adding to it? Is it possible we're going to have more bins, fewer bins, or just the same?
Thank you, Councillor Ault. So one of the objectives of the transition for the blue box is that no change at the curb. So that is the goal. So seamless for residents. We know that it's an ongoing challenge to maintain diversion at the levels we have it at. So ongoing education, ongoing work in the community, and so minimizing disruption. Part of our transition plan is also the communication strategy with the producers to make sure that folks are aware of the transition, aware of the changes. But essentially, it's really no change at the curb, and then a communication strategy to help folks understand what are the additional items that can be taken.
Thank you very much for that. There was something on my mind about that, and now it slipped it for the time being. I'm sure that'll come back.
But while it's coming back, I've got two quick questions. Does Guelph make money from recycling? And how successful has the Guelph diversion and recycling been? And what I'm looking for is the percentage of recycling that has been diverted from landfills.
Thanks again. At the curb, we're running, I think, around a 58% diversion rate. It has dropped from a high of close to 70, I believe, over the last few years. Part of that is because things like newspapers are not in there anymore. We're seeing those sorts of transitions, and it's a weight-based calculation. So you'll see as the heavier stuff has come out of the blue box, for instance, it's more light packaging like the clamshells. The diversion calculation doesn't give us the best representation anymore of the effectiveness of the program. So in our master plan, we've moved to focusing on the gray bin and the targets there over the next few years to try and reduce the amount per capita of waste generated, which allows us to focus on performance metrics. We have a little more control over than the packaging metric is, especially as the blue box transitions out. In terms of, so that's where we're at, around 58 to 60% at the curb. I'm just trying to remember the other part of your question. Yes. From recycling, again, the provincial program subsidizes 50% of the cost. So we receive a grant check, for lack of a better word, from the producer organization. We also receive the revenue from the recycling. So we work hard to optimize the material recovery facility to maximize both diversion and revenue. But it's not fully cost recovery, and that's where it's moving to the producers. It's subsidized by the taxpayers by about 50%. Overall, the revenue roughly for solid waste represents about 40% of the overall operating cost. That's for use of the PDO, use of grants, the revenue we receive for selling goods, and so on and so forth.
That was actually the question I was going to ask Tanya. So you've got another one there as well?
Sure. I recently read that the organizations that were responsible for producing glass items in Ontario have sort of put their plans on hold for the recycling and or the refilling of glass. Does this affect Guelph's or Ontario in general? Does this affect the plans for producers to be responsible for the items that they produce?
I don't anticipate any issues relative to what the residents will see at the curb. It would still be, the glass would still be accepted in the Blue Box program. In terms of the responsibility, it's a legislative responsibility. So I think they might be just working through what's the best approach to address concerns relative to glass. And I was just mentioning that a deposit return, like the beer store has been very successful. And so you might see different types of approaches or different things like that. But again, the fundamental principle at the curb is no change. That being said, the glass folks may be looking at better ways to recover glass.
Great. Tanya, there's a couple of questions in the chat. I haven't asked these individuals, but I'm going to see if John Hart would like to ask his question directly, because I think it's a really good one about roof shingles. John, are you willing to turn your microphone on and ask Cameron directly about that particular challenge?
Yeah, I was really shocked the other day by an answer from a fellow with a giant bin. He had removed the shingles from yet another roof. And you know, we all do that somewhere between 15 and 25 years. Every house that has shingles changes shingles. So we're talking about a lot of stuff. And I said, do we recycle these? Oh, no, he says, they go to landfill. Well, that's an enormous load of stuff going to landfill. He said, yeah, the reason is, you know, different shingles have different stuff in them, you know. I didn't inquire, but there's an opportunity to not load up our landscape with shingles. I don't know how easy it is to recycle them. Perhaps you know.
Thank you very much. Maybe there's a bit of a misunderstanding. We do recycle shingles. They are returned to the folks who make them. We have an ICI bunker at the Waste Resource Innovation Center. If the load is contaminated with other materials, that would go to landfill. So and one of the things we're working on as part of our Zero Waste Economic Transformation Lab with our Smart Cities office is a pilot where we're doing source separated at the construction site. So to avoid those bins of mixed materials where it's impossible to pull out the good material, we're now looking at ways to actually do that at the construction site. And if you want to tell your friend that if the load is clean, we do recycle those shingles.
Actually, I'm going to unpack that a bit as well. I was wondering if you could talk about construction materials in general. And this might sound odd, but what do you mean by a clean load? How clean? Because surely there must be things like nails and wood that are often attached to shingles.
Thank you. Yeah, so it would be nails would be fine. Wood would start to get problematic if there was too much of it. Things like garbage in there, when you start seeing insulation and on and on, those are the kinds of loads that become problematic. A shingle mixed with garbage bags becomes very problematic to try and pull them apart. And so it ends up in the transfer station.
Okay, thank you. What about construction materials?
So our construction diversion program includes drywall, wood, concrete, and shingles. Those are the things we also incentivize bringing in clean loads by offering those at a discounted rate relative to the gate rate. So we incentivize their diversion that way, and then the contractors would get that savings. And we're also again working on a pilot to actually include swept separation rate at the construction site.
Morgan, I don't know. I see that you've taken over from Tanya. Do you have questions that you have that you want to ask right now, or should I keep going?
I do have one question. Cameron, I know that there was a request put out by the nonprofit to various municipalities asking them to be an interim provider while they figured things out. I know Guelph rejected that request, and I'm just wondering if you can sort of expand on why it was such a good idea to reject that request.
Thank you very much. In terms of choosing to not accept the offer, it was really related to the conditions around that being not attractive, and then essentially needing to transition twice. So it was for a 1 year interim period. From a pace and capacity perspective, the work to transition to that and then to transition out was significant. So that was in a nutshell. The contract terms were not attractive, and then we were into two transitions instead of one, and we're working very hard on the 2025 date.
Okay, Morgan, there was another question that I completely forgot about. Irene, you raised a question in the chat, and I was hoping that you might be willing to ask it. So if you're willing, then you would turn your mic on. We'd love to hear from you.
Just asking the question about long-term sustainability and commitment to providing the service. So based on Morgan's comment, is this a non-profit organization or business that is currently providing the service?
The nonprofit are the folks who will be overseeing the contracts. The folks who will be collecting and processing will be doing that for profit.
Okay, so this is my question then. Let's see if I can bring it back up here. What long-term commitment does the company have to provide, or the companies have to providing a service? And I'm looking at businesses have the history of abandoning whatever is no longer profitable. So I'm just wondering about that. What commitment is there to for this to be something that isn't abandoned?
The commitment comes through the legislation, through the provincial governments, the Waste Free Ontario Act. In terms of the business choices companies make as a result of full visibility of the impact of packaging, and it's really consumer driven, it's what we're purchasing that really drives all of this. They may make choices to provide the products. The service will be required. It's the products that may change in terms of how they're packaged or what's available based on the full view of the life cycles.
Irene, does that help? Or do you need
it does. I guess I'm just a little curious about how all of this works. I guess I haven't been right on top of following how the recycling process works. So basically you're saying it's going to continue as long as the, you know, kind of a natural business model.
Yeah, that's the driver behind the circular economy, economy being the main. It's creating that visibility to the costs of waste and incentivizing optimization through actually assigning those costs to the folks who produce the packaging. That creates that accountability and incentivizes the as well as with corporate sustainability goals. Those sorts of things incentivizes the packaging optimization and product optimization. And there's an ongoing dialogue with the consumers. And you can see that as products are changing almost daily in terms of electric vehicles and all this kind of stuff that we're seeing really emerge quite a bit. So that's the kind of thing folks need to, or the producers will be paying attention to.
So is this going to turn into then a pay-for-use kind of a model? As opposed to right now, everything is just collected. We're paying through our taxes. The taxation system is no longer contributing to it. So does that mean that we will be receiving bills?
I don't have an answer for that one right now.
Irene, I think that it is contingent upon decisions that are made by council related to taxation and user fees. I'm not certain that there is any appetite for putting user fees on waste collection. And there's a simple reason for that. We can say that taxpayers are overburdened, but my concern is more that as much as Morgan and Tanya are honest and decent people, I don't want them to see those fees as a disincentive for dropping their garbage off in the middle of Exhibition Park and elsewhere, as I know they tend to do in the middle of the night when they go to visit their raccoon friends. And honestly, being completely serious about that, there is nothing that drives me crazier than seeing loads of garbage in the ditches along the road. And I know full well it's because of two things. Somebody doesn't want to take it to the landfill, and somebody doesn't want to pay. Cam, do you want to talk about that any further?
Sure, yeah. Thank you, Councillor. While you're speaking, the circular economy approach would mean that the cost would flow through into the packaging, most likely. That's most likely where, and so it would not be a bill for service. It would be that the folks would be recovering that through their products and packaging. And again, that incentivizes the whole economic piece where you want to keep those products as competitive as possible. So I don't anticipate any bills.
And just as an example, I just wanted to give an example of something that's already happening within one realm of manufacturing. Anybody that goes to the liquor or beer store, you will have noticed that those plastic rings that held the cans together are almost completely gone. The majority of manufacturers have gone back to a cardboard box or they have created a new sort of cardboard piece that holds the cans that won't be a danger to our wildlife and can actually be recycled. So this whole program has already started at least one industry in changing how they do their packaging.
Thanks, Margaret. And now I'm going to pass it to three of our aerobic digesters here at the restaurant. They seem to be pretty well finished composting, and I think they're ready to ask a question.
My concern, and it kind of relates back to a question that one of our previous ladies online asked about companies abandoning when they, you know, they discover that, oh, we're not making as much profit as we thought, and therefore we're going to stop. My concern is then, you know, do they just take all this waste and instead of trying to sort it, they just truck it directly to the landfill? Your comment was about the government legislation in that. And again, that doesn't give me a lot of confidence because all we need then is a government that is very pro-business, and business starts lobbying and saying, oh, this is too expensive, you know, we can't afford this. I don't have a lot of faith, I guess, that this is actually going to work.
There we go. And I think that's a healthy degree of pessimism or perhaps cynicism. Cam, what's your view on that? Do you think, do you feel, do you hope this is going to work?
I think, feel, and hope it is going to work, yes. In terms of what's in the regulations that's currently being worked on are the performance targets for the system, so the recovery targets. And that's been a point of contention. Guelph is certainly, we've advocated as staff to the province. So this isn't done in a vacuum. There's lots of feedback from the cities, including Guelph, to the province as they've been going through the public consultation on this process. And furthermore, we will, part of our transition plan is the monitoring moving forward. So one of the things we don't want to see is things that others are responsible for landing in our waste stream, and therefore the costs being borne by the taxpayer. So there will be ongoing dialogue about the performance of the system, and we will continue to monitor the entire system as well as the province to ensure that the bar is raised. And that's really been our goal the whole time. It has to be better than that's the whole promise of the circular economy. If it fails, we've really not achieved province wide or after. So we have a role in that. The province has a role in that, and we'll be vigilant in terms of making sure that tax dollars are well spent relative to our.
Great, thanks. And I'm going to pass the microphone over to our two perfect recyclers. Both of them are librarians, and we need to remember that libraries recycle books ad infinitum. So, Juanita.
I'm trying to understand this whole process, and it sounds like we're privatizing garbage, essentially, or continuing to, as far as I know, but also trying to make the corporations and the companies responsible for dealing with it, which I love that idea. The second half, not so much the first. I share Glenn's concern about, you know, I'll be waiting to see Delpho come out with some sort of reaction and reactive action, I guess. Further again to what Glenn was saying, so we're trying to mitigate any possibility of ending up having it dumped on us again, and I'm wondering about plans for that. The other concern I have is around garbage in the downtown and the effects that it might have on the unhoused population. If businesses are responsible for their garbage as well, how reactive will they be to try to clear people from where they need to be because there isn't anywhere else? Aren't too many places for them to go. Thanks.
Let me try to deal with the second part of that first, because I think that's probably a little bit out of in Cameron's domain, but I don't think it's so far out of city council's domain and our downtown staff. I think anytime that we are dealing with those who are inadequately housed that are in the downtown area, we have challenges with everything from support, protection, shelter, to exactly what you said. And I think that will be a perennial issue until such time as we solve homelessness. And I think we're truthfully going to have to be on top of it with our welcoming streets people, with businesses being mindful that there is a right of everyone to use the streets, and with all residents being respectful of the need to have a clean environment. I don't think it's going to be an easy thing for us, as it's not an easy thing right now, but I think that we will need to be understanding that the downtown environment is one that is equally as worthy of being protected as any other, and that we should be mindful of how we dispose of our waste.
I'd like to just jump in there for a moment, if I may. Please do check out the Have Your Say with regard to downtown garbage disposal, and give your comments, because there are three options, and there might be one of those options that would satisfy your concerns, Juanita. And that's what I'd like to say.
Thank you very much, Councillor Alden Pena. I would just add, relative to the fear of backsliding, is what we call it. That's some of that trepidation we will be addressing as we move forward with our transition plan, our communication to council, about how we're going to address those very types of concerns. So customer service, so not dropping the ball during transitions that folks are feeling anxiety or anything like that, communicating clearly what are the objectives, what are the changes, and that those are things that Councillor Alt and council can expect to see from us to address those very types of concerns. The objective is to absolutely not drop the ball here and to transition it professionally.
Yeah, just one final point before I get to Duncan, who has a question as well. I think that we need to recognize that there is the potential for scapegoating people who are underhoused or not housed at all. And sometimes the very issues that we are seeing with downtown waste on the streets is not caused by them at all. I'll be very, very blunt. One of my big concerns in the downtown always has been, and if anybody remembers when this was Sun's, has been the waste on the streets after a good night of drinking on a Friday or a Saturday night. And those are not people that are underhoused or not housed at all. Those are people that are relatively affluent, and I hate to target them, but I'm going to have to, quite often are going to university and should know better.
I've got another question related to shingles. We're all really old here, and we all remember the Hagerfield tire fire. And it's been one of my concerns about what the heck now happens to tires. They're incredibly complicated to shred and take the steel out and carbon fiber and all that stuff. Can you just briefly tell us what happens to tires now?
Thank you very much. In terms of their ultimate fate and how they're handled, I would be speaking out of my depth if I went into the recycling factories. But one of the programs that was transitioned early was tires. So that was a program that the City of Guelph, we used to accept tires. That was one of the first programs that was transitioned to the producers of tires, and they're now responsible and accountable for collecting and processing the tires. The tires are used, the rubber is reused. That program has, part of that program transition, there were multiple retailers identified. We were in constant communication with what's called the Resource Productivity and Recovery Authority. Well, I stumbled on that one. Anyways, during the time of transition, there's a whole list. So from Canadian Tire through on, where folks can return their tires. And that's how that model was addressed. And in terms of then the regulations around tire recycling, that would be part of the ministry's approval process for that process. So I think Hagersville taught us all a big lesson about having no market and stockpiling things like that in a way that could allow for fire. So even the handling of that, I'm going to surmise, was greatly improved to avoid that sort of situation. And I remember it as well. So yes.
And I just want to jump in. That program is working, and it's evidenced by the lesser amount of used tires that are landing on our beaches. Over the last 20 years, I have been going to a beach, and every year there are less and less of those old tires coming up on the shores. So for all the people that are worried about the manufacturers not sticking to it, that program's been in effect for quite some time, and it does appear to be very successful.
Yes, tires are certainly one of the waste products from the automotive industry. So just a suggestion to everyone, get on your bikes or get in the buses, and that will help us a lot. We've been very successful, I believe, with our composting program. But I am also skeptical about the composting program. From your point of view, how well has it worked? What are the challenges with contamination? And how do we address contaminants? Organic should, I believe, be pure so that we can then recycle it. And like I said, I'm not certain that we are ever able to do that to the point of 99.9% pure.
Thank you very much, Councillor. The organics program of the City of Guelph is excellent as far as I'm concerned. In terms of quality control, the material that comes from both the region and the city, we process both in city-owned facilities. So we process 20,000 tons of the region of Waterloo's material and 10,000 tons of the Guelph material under contract. So part of the QAQC is first the frontline communications to the residents about what is allowed. And there's screening that's involved at the facility. There's mechanical processes to remove any other materials. The aerobic degradation of the materials is closely monitored. We're producing a AA compost, which is the highest standard there is, and it's regulated through the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. And it's tested regularly as part of our ongoing QAQC and monitoring. We work with the contractor. We meet monthly to discuss performance of the facility, any concerns. We address the concerns as they come up. So in terms of contamination, it's about in Guelph specifically, we have automated vehicles with cameras. So they're actually the operators are looking to look for contamination right as the cart is tipped. It's a comprehensive process involved by law. So you might get a sticker on your bin, you might get a knock on the door, those sorts of things. We've moved into AI as well, and we've done some pilots relative to food waste and organics, where we can enhance that process probably 20-fold in terms of data that we can collect instantaneously about contamination. So using AI to identify issues and then communicate directly to the customer, to the resident. The carts are all RFID tagged, and so we can enhance bylaw communication. That's the front end of it, right through to the back end, which is the technology and the monitoring, through to the compliance monitoring through the CFIA designation.
I'm going to carry on with that one for a bit, because I think Morgan and I have a similar question. Now, true confessions, I use biodegradable bags for my garbage now, and that was because in winter, maybe not this winter coming, my garbage would freeze solid, and I would have 6 inches to about a foot of frozen garbage in the bottom. So I finally decided to go to these biodegradable bags. But Morgan's question is about microplastics as well. And my concern equally is, sorry, folks, what about dog poop bags? Do they pose a challenge? And do we encourage people to use biodegradable and in fact, are plastic bags even allowed in our organic stream?
Thanks very much, Councillor. So plastic bags are not allowed, but the certified compostable ones, BPI, they'll have them. They are allowed for those purposes. If you tie it in a knot, the knot will not make it through. So it'll get rejected. So they have to be sort of loosely, and they will biodegrade. I think our goal would be to have the most avoidable, like food waste in there, and use those things for exactly the purpose you're speaking to. The microplastics and biodegradable plastics, I don't believe are the same. One breaks down, one doesn't. One just breaks down in small little parts and stays around. So plastic bags, things like that make it into our compost stream are screened out, first of all. And then if they do make it in there, there's mechanical screening that goes on. And there's a sieve, essentially, that really, the finished compost is super fine. And any of the remaining sort of biodegradable plastics are quickly further processed in the aerobic conditions in the soil, which we've done studies on that as well relative to other. So the soil also, as it's applied as a nutrient, and we also have great markets for this material. So the farmers are looking for this. So it's all about the quality control, keeping the upstream clean, using things like the compostable bags as required, and then obviously no plastics at all, which are screened out and they are removed. Okay.
And actually, Morgan, you've just provided me with a bit of education. And I have to confess, I don't know if I use biodegradable or compostable bags. And you said there is, in big letters, a big difference. Morgan, can you outline what some of those are? I think it's worthwhile for everybody to figure that one out, because like I said, I don't know what I use.
For me, what I've learned about biodegradable is that biodegradable is kind of producer defined. If you look at the straws from one of the companies, they say, oh, you can throw our pen in or our straws in and they biodegrade. Well, my cousin decided to test that, and he put this straw that's supposed to biodegrade in regular soil within 90 days, and 2 years later, he still has that particular straw in his soil. When it comes to compostable, it's designed to break down quickly, so it can go into the compost, whereas the biodegradable stuff requires specific conditions in order for it to biodegrade the way that it's supposed to.
That is a super distinction there, and I really appreciate you making that. It's certified compostable, BPI. You'll see those types of branding on the bags in the grocery store relative to, so if you're in the grocery store and you're looking for compostable bags, you will see that as well. And you're absolutely right. And the other thing to note is there are things that are compostable, but they don't work in our system. So it's a high rate system. It's got a small footprint. It's meant to process food waste and process it quickly. It doesn't have 90 days to do its job. It has to do it much faster than that. So even though something like a coffee pod may be biodegrade or certified compostable, it doesn't necessarily work. And what would happen to that is some of it would break down and then some of it would be directed to landfill if it makes it into our system.
Okay, Tanya, I think we are pretty well winding up here. I think this has been just such a lot of garbage. And I think in this case, that's been a good thing. It's been, as much as anything else, it's been almost a university style seminar where we've been teaching each other a lot about the topic at hand, which is Guelph's waste disposal. First of all, I do want to remind people at this point, as I'm filling in time, this is a Hillside weekend. And I want to make certain that anybody that's going out there makes absolutely certain that you are well protected from the sun and from the heat. You will absolutely need sunscreen, and you will need something to keep your electrolytes up besides beer. As much as beer is good, we want to be safe while we're out there. But with that, what I would also like to do is I'd really like to thank Cameron for being here. I've learned a lot about waste, and I would say that I am not perfect at this. I do look forward to us getting better at it, and I think that this is one of the things that we can truly pat Guelph on the back for. I think we've done a good job on this, and we're going to keep getting better. It's certainly going to take will. It's probably going to cost us something, but let's be honest, if this planet is worth it, I think we're prepared to pay. Tanya, how about some announcements?
Hey, so we've got some Guelph Culture Plan happening. So please do sign up for one of the three Culture Conversation Cafes. We will be talking about what does the word culture mean to you, what is special about culture in Guelph, and what is missing from the culture scene across the community, how we can best address those gaps, and what role should the city play in Guelph culture. And these Culture Conversation Cafes will occur on next week, Tuesday, October 1st from 7 to 9 p.m. at Longo's, which is on 24 Clare Road West. Thursday, August 3rd from 10 till noon at the Guelph Little Theatre, which is at 176 Morris Street. And Saturday, August 5th from 10 to noon at the Guelph Civic Museum, which is at 52 Norfolk Street. And after you have attended these cafes, you will be well informed to complete the survey, the deadline of which is Sunday, August the 6th. Please have your say about the Downtown Waste Project. The deadline is Friday, August the 18th, and it is a very short survey. So please let Cameron know what you think of the three options to better our downtown waste collection. Furthermore, there is the development charges. Please ask questions and share your opinion of the draft 2023 development charges background study. As you can imagine, this is super important. Please have your say about the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Again, there is the draft master plan. Ask your questions because this master plan goes before council in October. The deadline for your input is Sunday, August the 13th. Public washrooms in Guelph. The University of Guelph and the City of Guelph are working together to produce a report to advise council about improving washroom access across Guelph. Please take part in a 45-minute interview and you'll receive a $15 honorarium. Contact Edith at uoguelph.ca. And finally, this is the final Breezy Breakfast of the summer. We will see you on September the 7th. And some of the topics that we will be considering are welcome back to school issues, Budget 101, and talking with our MP Lloyd Longfield. Thank you, everybody, for being here. Thank you, Cameron Walsh. And I will see you in September.
Happy holidays, everyone. I'm looking forward to sleeping in.
Aren't we all?
That is all for this week and for the summer of 2023. Thanks for tuning in. Music is provided by Jules Jung. I'm Long Fei Chen, and I produce this podcast while aerobically digesting snacks. Breezy Breakfast will be back in September after a month-long break. See you then.